Unlock the past and safeguard your memories with scanmyphotos.com. Here's our special promo code, GODIGITAL, to get a whopping up to 50% off your photo scanning order. Don't let your cherished moments fade away. Digitize them now with precision and care. Whether it's old slides, photos, or films, bring them into the digital age and relive those precious memories. This is an affiliate promotion, meaning we may earn a commission if you take advantage of this fantastic deal. Act fast, preserve your history, and save big with Go Digital at scanmyphotos.com. Hi, I'm Maureen Taylor, the photo detective. I really love family photographs, all of them, from the mystery images you find in shoeboxes and albums to the pictures you snap with your digital devices. No mystery is too small. A simple question about an image can lead to new stories of your ancestors. This means you can count on me to help you identify the people in them, offer solutions for preserving and organizing them, and yes, even guide you in the various ways to gather and share picture stories with your relatives. It's time for another episode of Ask Maureen. This is a monthly podcast where you submit your questions either to me by email at photodetective@maureentaylor.com or on social media when we put out a call for questions. I want to start today's session with a really interesting thing that someone sent me. Gregory Lawrence, this is a shout out to you. He matched up a mother and a baby in cased images by using the bonnet ties in the mother's picture with the ties visible in the solo baby picture. She was holding the baby. Sharp Eye Award, Gregory. That's absolutely awesome. If anyone else has a photo ID tip, some photo mystery they've solved in a crafty way, I'd love to hear about it. Also email me at photodetective@maureentaylor.com. I focused on a theme in the podcast, which was tintypes in February. And we talked to a collector. I talked to a couple of actual modern day tintype photographers who use historical equipment and techniques. It's another bonus episode of the podcast. And it's with a guy by the name of Rob Gibson, who travels the country with a portable tintype studio in a sidecar on his motorcycle. And his tintypes are actually featured in films and on television. So when they do a historical drama, like the movie Harriet, for instance, and they need a tintype, they call Rob, he shows up, he takes the tintypes, and then they feature them in the movie or the television series. It's a remarkable life, but I'll let him talk about it in the podcast, so don't miss it. If you're not on my newsletter list, then why not? Because you get the first notice of when these episodes drop, and you can sign up for early registration for any of my webinars and seminars that you might want to take. So just go to my website or Facebook and sign up for the newsletter and make it so. Come on the list. We have a good time. What else do I want to talk about? So I was reading the paper one morning and I saw this article about this guy in the Shetland Islands who worked at the local recycling center. So he comes across these two bags of slides and he starts poking through them and discovers that they're slides of the Shetland Islands in the 1970s. And the islands have changed significantly since then. So he is a local historian on top of it. So the bags were found by the perfect person on the perfect day. And I thought, what are the chances I can find this guy? And I did. I found him on Facebook and I sent him a message. And you know, if you're not friends with someone on Facebook, it goes to the other mailbox. And who knows what happens to those? And, you know, it can take a while for you to suddenly say, hey, I wonder who's reached out to me in the other box. But in this case, Paul got right back to me. It was like seconds I send him a little note, say, I saw the story in the paper. I'd love to talk with you about this slide collection that you found and how you found it. And he reached out and said, sure. And then the most remarkable thing happened because he said, well, what are you doing this afternoon? Because I'm actually not doing anything. And so we jumped right on the call and I recorded it and I decided he had to be the bonus episode. And here's the thing. I'm so glad I did it because we had this wonderful conversation. You know, we can't really travel anywhere right now, but I felt like I was in the Shetland Islands and we talked about the slide collection. We talked about Shetland a little bit. It's on my bucket list for visiting. And then we actually went off topic a little bit and talked about a special DNA project that is happening for people descended from people of the Shetland Islands. And it's a medical DNA project. So if you have ancestry from Shetland, you might want to listen to that episode. It has been so far my most popular episode of the entire year. It just like went right up like a rocket. So I know you guys are listening and thank you so much. It was just great. In other news, there is big news from VivaPix.com. And VivaPix is actually now publishing Reunions Magazine. I wrote for Reunions Magazine for a number of years. I had a little column on photographs and family reunions. It's a valuable resource for anyone planning a reunion, be it virtual or in person. And now it's an e-magazine and it's quite beautiful. And I will include the link to that in my show notes as well for this. Have you tried the new photo features in the MyHeritage app? You can now photograph your pictures, which is sort of like Google Photo Scan, only it's in the MyHeritage app. Photograph your images, add them to your account, and there's a little button so that you can record a story. That's right, you can record a story associated with those pictures. And remember my signature five, the who, what, where, when, and why of the image. You want to make sure that you do all of that, cover all those points when you record the story, or get some one of your family members if you're at their house and you're trying to, you know, capture all their images, although you know, when you can go to their house, capture their images and then get them to record the story of what they remember about those pictures. That's mostly it in the news and notes section of the podcast and this broadcast. Although I will say, please watch me on Instagram. Instagram is the most natural platform for me because it's all images. And I've been on Instagram for a long time and I love it. And I follow lots of people. I do all this virtual travel now with a hashtag in the country that I want to visit or the city I want to visit. And you can do that too. But I'm also playing around with Instagram stories, which is the new hot topic in social media. And some of the ways that you can use Instagram stories is you can have them interactive. So you can actually have a poll. Also, if you do not follow me on YouTube, but please follow me on YouTube. I'm trying to get to a certain number of followers and I could use your help. What else do I have? All right. How about we jump into some questions? Diane Smithberg, thank you so much for your question. She wants to know, do I have a good resource for looking up photographers' names by location and years that they were active in town, county, et cetera? So here's the interesting thing about researching photographers. Mostly, there's no comprehensive guide to that at all, Diane, unfortunately. But we have resources at our disposal to help us with that. City directories, both on Ancestry.com and on MyHeritage.com, are a great way to research photographers. The MyHeritage actually shows you everyone at a certain address. There's some cool city directory features on MyHeritage. You can also, and I absolutely recommend this, you should start by Googling the name of the photographer because someone may have already written about that photographer on a blog. It may be in a special collection department somewhere and it's digitized. There may be a finding aid for that. You can search them on Internet Archive. My top tips for researching a photographer, Google it first, and then use the city directories and census records, just like you would for a family member. What else? Oh, Monica Mihaljevic, do you have any good references for dating children's clothing in the late 19th, early 20th century? Ancestry.com, this is your best source because this is an original source. This isn't something someone has written. This is actually published in the Time. And that's, of course, when we're doing all of our research, the best resource that we can use is one that's made in the time in which we're searching. And that is the Historic Catalogs of Sears Roebuck, 1896 to 1993 on Ancestry.com. Now, I don't know about you, but at Christmas time, we always sat down with the wish book and made our wish list. Now, nothing on the wish list ever appeared under the tree, but it was an activity that kept us busy for hours. So whether you're researching late 19th, early 20th century children's costume, and you can do that by year and season or just in general, or you want to relive your own childhood, look at your own Easter bonnet, perhaps, you can do that with the historic catalogs on Ancestry.com. It is absolutely one of the best sources for children's outfit. And there's so many shifts in children's clothing in the late 19th, early 20th century. Play clothes suddenly becomes a thing for everyone, and not just the wealthy. There's all kinds of fun children's clothing in the Sears catalog. So take a look, play around with it, jump around, use the keyword searching, and that helps a lot. Tyler Offhammer asked, how can you tell the financial status of a person by a portrait? That's tricky. It's very tricky. The myth is your ancestors had no money, so they wouldn't have dressed up for their family portrait. In fact, if you were going to go to the photo studio, and unless you absolutely had no resources whatsoever, financial resources, that you would dress up for your picture. You would wear that going to church suit or the suit you got married in or something like that. And you wanted to look good in your picture. Photo studios did not have wardrobes to share, but they might have some props, like maybe a hat or a scarf or a shawl, something like that. Some people borrowed clothing to go to the studio. You know, a young boy might borrow something from his father or his uncle. But how can you tell the financial status of a person? There are things in a picture, obviously a woman in furs, heavy, real jewelry. What else? Although there's costume jewelry, it can be hard to tell the difference. The more trim on an outfit, generally, the more money. The bigger the outfit, especially in the like big sleeves of the 1890s, may mean that this person has a little more income than someone else. Bigger skirts, more fabric. So more fabric in an outfit generally, and because women are making their outfits in the mid to late 19th century, generally means they can afford the fabric to make the dress. That's some of the things you look for. Carol Strominus had a, and I'm sorry if I murder your names, is there a way to tag individuals in photos in our tree media, much like on Facebook? Carol, this depends on the program you use. So I really, really, really want to know what program you use, because I'm thinking that this would make a great series for my Ask the Expert webinars, where I have guest people come on and present informational sessions on their topics. And some of these are only available to my newsletter subscribers, so you might want to get on the list. June Butka said that she Googled and found a photograph of her great-grandmother's family. Yes, sometimes, June, the strangest things can pop up. That she found a postcard of the street at the time of the photograph. So she's got two pictures. It's a twofer. It's great. Somebody asked, what should they do with old Polaroid images that are deteriorating? The sad thing about Polaroid is there was so much fun, right? The instant photos before we had cell phones. You'd take a picture, you'd watch it develop, you'd put the chemicals on it. It was great. Unfortunately, these photographs do deteriorate. So even early on, Polaroid had a copying service. You would send your pictures to them and they would copy them on a more stable photographic medium. We did that with some of ours. Now I should pull them out and see how stable those prints are. What you should do with all your Polaroids is absolutely positively scan them, use VivaPix Photo Restore if you need to fix the coloring a little bit. MyHeritage has the new color restoration tool as well. That's about the only thing you can do with them because they may continue to deteriorate. Oh, we have a complicated question from Jim Fussell. Can you tell us about changing exposure times for photographic portraits over the many decades, including how long exposure times account for blurred or wooden facial expressions? As children blinked and squirmed and everyone did their best to stay still? And he asked if I had any examples. Of course I have examples, Jim. Absolutely. A famous example is this one. In 1839, Louis Daguerre took a photograph of a boulevard in Paris. And it looks like there's no one there. No one. But in fact, there were people there, but the exposure time was so slow that you can't see them. The only two people available to be viewed in this picture are where you have a man getting a shoe shine. So you have the shoe shine person and the man with his foot up on the box getting his shoes cleaned. How long was the exposure time? Here's your answer. So in the daguerreotype era, and here's what happens. Depends on light, depends on the camera, depends on the temperature. 5 to 30 minutes was the exposure time. And this information comes from the Encyclopedia of 19th Century Photography. When Talbot was taking his paper photographs in England, he said that it usually took him about an hour to capture an image. Here's the thing you have to remember. So cameras in those days didn't have a shutter. So you would take the lens cap off the camera and then look at your watch and do a countdown for how long. So it's an inexact science for sure. And then you'd put the cap back on. Later, there was wet collodion. And in that era, which is the 1850s, you only had to sit for several seconds. Now, the Encyclopedia of 19th Century Photography says that's why people didn't smile. I don't know about that. I've read other things that people didn't smile because it was a serious thing to go to the studio and they didn't want to look clownish. So they didn't smile. I've seen more of that. If only someone left a letter about that. But even in 1851, any action was a blur. If you wondered how our ancestors posed for images, this would clamp around your neck and hold you still. So it was, I would think, pretty ghastly. So maybe you're so uncomfortable you don't smile. And then suddenly, in the 1870s, there's cameras with shutters. Sometimes people did smile for pictures. Occasionally, I will see people with sort of a smirky smile or sometimes a full teeth smile. There were cameras with shutters in the 1870s, so you had more control over the exposure time. And then exposure meters start to be marketed in the 1880s, making it a reality for instant pictures that photographers in the 1860s really wanted. Helen Simmons had a question that she has a badly rusted tintype photo of her great-grandfather at age 5, circa 1866. Helen, unfortunately, rust continues to spread. You have to absolutely scan it at 1200 DPI or photograph it with a really good smartphone camera. And then you also want to put it in a non-PVC polyester sleeve. One of the things I'm doing on my website is putting a product recommendation sheet. So many people ask me, Maureen, what scanner do you use? What photo pen should I use? When should I use this? When should I use that? That is going to be on my website. And if you are on my newsletter list, again, you will be shared that private page. It's not going to be a public page. Any other questions for me? I love doing these Ask Maureens. All right. Thank you so much, everyone. See you next month and watch for the Facebook post where we ask for questions. Talk to you later. Allie.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media, leave me a rating and a review. And if you know of a friend or family member who's also interested in family photographs, share this episode with them too. See you next time. I'm thrilled to be offering something new. Photo Investigations. These collaborative one-on-one sessions look at your family photos. You and I meet to discuss your mystery images and find out how each clue and hint might contribute to your family history. And trust me, these images can reveal so much in your research. I have decades of experience in the photo, genealogy, and history industries. This is your chance to learn from me and discover the stories in your family images. You can find out more by going to MaureenTaylor.com and clicking on Family Photo Investigations.